This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known guests about their lives, their careers, and negotiating those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Paley Phillips, and with me in his den of iniquity, it's Jim Daly.
Jimmy, lovely. Little call back to last week's episode.
Jim Daly.
I know, a few weeks ago with Jermaine Pennant.
Jimmy Daly.
There's a comedian called James Jones, I think his name was, or Jimmy James Jones. I don't know if he's still going. Really nice guy. He was a very energetic comedian from the...
That's an energetic name.
Open mics. It is, yeah.
Here he comes, nice Jimmy guy. James Jones.
I'm going to see...
Jimmy Jones, yeah. It's a lot of...
He was
J's,
a good MC. He was a really good MC. Like, that was his, that was his vibe. Looks like he's still going.
Maybe we'll get him on the pod.
Let's get him on. He's a lovely guy. But yes, Den of Iniquity. People are going to start wondering what I'm in, what I'm doing.
You're in your Den of Iniquity, of course.
Clearly, I'm in my Den of Iniquity.
Because you're such an iniquitous kind of character.
Clearly. But anyway, it's good to be here. I'm looking forward to this week's episode. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. It's really cranked up heat-wise, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It is almost tropical, I would say, outside at the moment. You're down by the coast, though, so you probably get a breeze, don't you?
We do get a breeze, yeah. But also, our house is south-facing, so the garden gets very warm. Because apparently that's what happens in south-facing. That's become a thing in conversation now. They say, your garden, is it south-facing? And then you say, oh, yes, it's south-facing. It gets a lot of sun. By midday, it's almost unbearable to be out there. But it's a thing that people say now. This is your garden south-facing? Maybe it's a bit of a middle-class thing.
Yeah, I haven't had that conversation. Although I do think our garden is south-facing. Maybe it's east. I don't know. But no, that makes sense. If you want a bit of sunshine, then yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, I feel like it's a bit of a lottery as to whether your garden is... Maybe that's something people research or they buy a house, but it's a bit of a lottery, really, if you turn up.
Yeah, it can be, yeah.
The garden happens to be south-facing. It's not something I would look for in a house.
Yeah, it's probably something that people do look for, but it's not something I would ever sort of notice.
No. Well, I'm just going now.
Well, maybe. I'm just looking up Den of Iniquity. It's a place of immoral behaviour. usually of a sexual type.
This is why I said you need to stop saying it, because people are going to get... I just work in here.
Anyway, the etymology of it is the origin of the term can be traced back to the New Testament of the Bible in both Gospel of Mark and Matthew. So it wasn't in just one gospel, it was in two. So it is the gospel truth. Jesus condemns those who have been using the sacred temple as a marketplace, proclaiming that they have made it a den of thieves. To this day, writers use the word den to mean a place where iniquitous... No, I can't even say the word. Anyway, that terrible stuff. Activities are carried out.
In all dens?
Yeah, in all dens. That's what they're... Well, they've branded all dens. Because, like, we had a den... We had made dens as kids. They were not iniquitous in any shape or form.
I mean, Millwall's ground is a new den. I'd say that's fairly... That makes sense.
Yeah, no offence to any Millwall fans listening, but for the majority of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I would say let's steer away from...
Yeah, it's not really a
iniquity,
den. Not,
yeah. Iniquity, or whatever the word is. And let's talk about this week's guest. This is one of the most fun chats we've had on the podcast, I think. We could have... I'm about to say, we could have chatted to Amanda for longer.
But we did.
We actually did.
Should have just kept rolling.
After we turned the mics off, because she's so easy to talk to. So, yes, it's the one and only Amanda Clapham. And, what a lovely person.
Yeah, Amanda's lovely. Really lovely. I've been trying to sort out this conversation for quite a while, and she's been so busy, it's been really difficult to organise it. So we're really pleased to be able to nail her down to a date. And it was a really fun conversation. We talked about all sorts of things. We started off talking about Wikipedia, of all things, and then and how that isn't always the best place to find out your information, because... Yeah. Up until recently, a lot of information about particularly her place of birth was wrong.
And
she had to go in and try and sort of work out how to fix it. So that was interesting. But obviously we talked about her acting work and her sort of what she's inspiring towards doing in the future.
On Hollyoaks.
Yeah, of course.
Hollyoaks,
yeah.
Chat. If you're a fan of Hollyoaks, you obviously know her from her 5 years there. So lots of talk about being on a soap and that kind of stuff. This is a production meeting live on air. Are we going to save the stuff at the end, particularly for the patrons?
I think we should, yeah.
So should we tease it? Because it's something that's come out recently. Something she put on her Instagram went viral. Loads of the newspapers about her being bitten by a spider. Mm. We'll leave it at that. And she goes into it. We'll save it for the patrons. It's fascinating. Yeah. Really interesting. But also very funny chat as well. So if you want to hear that and more from all our guests, we do it every week. We save a bit. Go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/blankpodcast. And you can hear the fascinating story about Amanda and the spider.
Amanda and the Spider, that sounds like a great children's
Roald Dahl book.
Yeah. Like Charlotte's Web. Amanda's Web.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh man.
It was more traumatic than the most. The most children's.
Yes, it wouldn't make a child's story, actually, I don't think.
Well, actually Roald Dahl, it probably would make a Roald Dahl story. This is actually be quite it's more like a Grimm Brothers tale. Anyway, it was great to talk about that as well.
This is interesting getting there, because you will see newspaper articles and stuff sometimes, and actually it never really covers the full story. It's actually it was an interesting story that you tell someone down in the pub and stuff, but newspapers do like to sort of latch onto these things and turn them into sensationalist stuff. But it's interesting getting the actual, it was just, a very normal story, but it's interesting, very interesting. Before we dip in, can I do a quick shout out to, for my Edinburgh Fringe show, because if I got my dates right, it's going to go out at the start of August, this episode, which is the week that Edinburgh starts.
So you get down there, people. Get down there and watch Jimmy and his...
Jim show.
Yeah.
I should have called it that.
Yeah.
No, my show is called Jim Daly Football. It's got my name in it still, Jim Daly Football and Fatherhood. I'm on at 4:30 p.m. every day from the 4th to the 28th, not including the 15th. 17th, 18th and 19th. Mm. But otherwise, there every day at 4:30 at the Grass Market Centre, very central location. It's a very silly, funny, sweet, heartwarming show about parenthood and football, but it's essentially about self-confidence and feeling like a fraud and getting sort of inspiration from the strangest of places. I'll leave it at that. It's very much sort of my journey through all those things with a very strange role model. I'll put it at that. But anyway, please do come along. It's pay what you want. You can turn up for nothing, or you can book a ticket for a fiver at edfringe.com. And if you are someone that comes to the Fringe, please do come along and see the show. It'd be lovely to see you there, because I enjoy doing the show. I'm proud of it, and I want as many people to see it as possible. So yeah, please do come along.
It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I'm really good. 20. So close now. something. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. So yeah, please do come along. Thank you for letting me do my promo. It's all about promo. Edinburgh's all about marketing.
All about
getting the word out there. 3,000 shows this year. So
wow.
Yeah, it's all about getting the.
I wonder, will there be anyone who can? Yeah, you couldn't possibly physically go to every show, could you? I was thinking, wonder if people try and see as many shows as possible.
There's just not enough days.
You just couldn't do it.
There's 24 days of shows.
Yeah,
and the most you can do. Most of them don't start till about. I think early ones are 11 a.m.
Right.
Possibly a midday, and then they go till 11 p.m. So that's 12 hours worth of shows.
So if you could do 12 hours a day.
You could do 12 times 24 is not going to be 3,000. It's 288.
288 hours of comedy.
So most you could do is 288.
Well, some of it might not be as funny as other stuff.
There's other stuff. There's not just, there's theatre.
That's what I mean. That's what I was saying. I wasn't making a slight against.
Well, talk about that another time. Because, well, in theory, it's a meritocracy, Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Anyone can go
and
do a show. That doesn't mean the quality is varied.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I'm an experienced stand-up.
So I could go and do a show, could I?
Yeah, you could. Yeah. Free Fringe, definitely. Mine's not quite Free Fringe. It's sort of next step up before paid Fringe. So it'd
have to be free. No one would want to pay to see anything.
Free Fringe, anyone can do. And you could see anything. You could see the next best thing. You could see something.
I'm not going to do it, but I'm just saying.
But the level I'm at is sort of the pay what you want Fringe is slightly next step up. So you are filtered out a bit. So it's more, I've been doing it 10 years, so more experience.
Yeah, I think mine would be more talking in the street level.
Mate, Edinburgh is packed. So there are people talking in the street all the time.
Perfect.
Go down the Royal Mile, people are constantly talking and performing and shoving flyers in. I mean, it's a magic. There's a lot of buzz. It's a magic.
Yeah, no, I can imagine it's very, very exciting.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming, I think, but it is very exciting indeed. But if you are going, a lot of people that get the brochure and get their spreadsheets out and work out what they're seeing and stuff and get a bit sort of like military about it, which I think is actually the best way to do it.
Yeah, you do need to be a bit like that. Yeah, you do.
So if you are doing any
kind of festival, you need to be like that.
Definitely. But if you are getting your spreadsheet out, add me to your spreadsheet and make sure you come and see Jim Daly, Football and Fatherhood while you're at the Fringe. Nice. Anyway, I think we should get on with.
Well, have we not got any tweets about how great,
how great
this show is?
We do. I've got one actually here from Mr. Jordan King.
Hey, Jordan.
At Jordan MB King. He's got a blue tick, so he's clearly someone very important.
He's verified then.
He's verified.
So he's a real person.
That's nice, actually.
He's not a bot.
To get exactly.
So we like that.
Exactly. Nice to get a real person reviewing our show. He said some really nice things, but he recently found Blank Pod has been a bit of a saving grace for me when I get very low and anxious. I'd recommend it highly to any creative people or anxious people or both. Well, that's nice. And I replied to him from our accounts, and it's nice that you get so much out of the pod. That's really,
yeah, thanks,
really
Jordan. That's
reassuring
really,
thing.
Yeah, that's always lovely to hear that people are utilizing us, our voices, for good. And it's helping them in their in all seriousness, if you know, if you are having a bit of anxiety or stuff and you need your mind taking off that, then you know, it's nice to know that we could be something that would distract you for a while.
Definitely. You know, who's going on about the den of iniquity now? No one. Because actually the pod is doing good work.
What's the opposite of iniquity?
I don't know. Just good old fashioned fun. What? No, just it would be something moral, wouldn't it? Morality. It'd be a place of moral. It'd be a church. You know, it'd be
the church of kindness, as opposed to the den of iniquity. Yeah.
The church of Jimmy G and Jim.
Jimmy G, Jimmy Jimmy G, and GPP Doggy Dog Dog.
We shouldn't have been that duo.
In the church of kindness and consideration.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, you could start that. Oh, I haven't got time, but we could start that church.
That rap duo.
People would follow us. People would follow that rapping church duo. We could get on with the episode there, even for us. We've not been fair to Amanda here with the build-up. So let's actually give her a proper welcome. Yes. This is actor and generally all-round fantastic person, Amanda Clapham, who you're going to love on the Blank Podcast.
So, Amanda, thank you. It's lovely to see you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Of course.
I know it's taken a while to sort this out. I know we've been a bit... it's been a bit of a shambles, isn't it? Like me trying to sort out getting dates to you and stuff.
Giles, don't give away our secret. Don't
yeah, I know. Well, I think people do need to know that it's like it can be quite a shambles and quite disorganised. And I think Amanda probably gauged from the last 5 minutes of talking that we're all over the place with regards to our conversations.
It's part of our charm.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Charm.
Yeah. Now, I was... Yeah, exactly. Now, I was looking on Wikipedia.
Oh, don't do that.
To find out. Well, yeah, I know. Well, this is not. It's not always a fountain of knowledge. And it says that you were born in Aberdeen. Is that actually true?
Okay, yes, that is true. But if you looked at my Wikipedia, maybe I don't know when I did this. Maybe a year ago now. It was in lockdown because obviously I had a lot of time. And it said that I was born in Manchester, and it always has ever since I've been on Wikipedia. And it always used to bother me because I wasn't born in Manchester. And so I think because my character on Hollyoaks, my mum was Mancunian. And so I played sort of, you know, a more sort of Mancunian part. So people just assumed I was from Manchester, but I was like, I'm actually Scottish and I was born in Aberdeen. Most people would just leave it, but I was just getting people just assuming I was from there. I was like, I'm actually Scottish. So I was really bored in lockdown and decided to find out how to edit your own Wikipedia page. It's not that straightforward. Oh. I mean, I don't... Mm. Yeah, it was really quite not... It wasn't fun. But I figured it out. And I also didn't like that I kept getting called an English actress. It's like, well, I'm very... Yeah. British. I'm the least amount of English. I'm more Scottish and Irish. So I was like, I'm British. So I did that come up? Does it say British now instead of English?
I don't know about that. Yeah, it does. Yeah,
yeah no, so, it does. It okay. says,
yeah, I'm just opening up now. It says British actress.
Yeah.
So there you go. So yeah, you've broken the system.
It was not easy. And you had to wait for a little while. No, I've heard that about Wikipedia.
Yeah, I've heard Wikipedia is quite a fortress to get into and be able to change your stuff. And I don't answer, because people are able to change information at a heartbeat, aren't they? If someone passes away or they get
And who's
or
doing this? Who is making the pages? I always wondered that.
But some people have a lot of time. Yeah, people that can do it for a really long time and figure it all out, because that took me a bit of time in lockdown. Luckily, I had it. But, you know, I was like, I couldn't do this full time.
Because I had a feeling that that's good that you were able to get in and change and make the right right corrections and put the right information down. Someone told me that you can't make your own page though.
Oh no, you can't. You can't create it. I think you can only edit it, and then that you have to do it from like I had to make a different email address that didn't have my name in it.
Right.
Here we go. It's just like Ocean's 11. But who sets them up? Because I've always wondered that. Who like sets the initial? It must be someone at Wikipedia whose job maybe, is to.
Well, I was thinking maybe I should set yours up, Jim, and you could do mine.
No, I think anyone can do it. But it just can't be
I was mentioned, so I don't have a Wikipedia page, and like part of me obviously secretly desperately wants one, but.
We all want one.
Like that's something. Anyone that says they don't is lying. We all want one because that's like an official. Like you are a celebrity if you have a Wikipedia page. But I was mentioned. So I do an annual YouTube song where I do a parody of Billy Joel. We Didn't Start the Fire to football clubs, and it's like I've done it for like 7 years now, and it always does really well. It's nice. Everyone likes it. It's all very silly and whatever. And at one point, I was mentioned on the Wikipedia page for We Didn't Start the Fire, but my name didn't have a blue link, didn't go anywhere. And I've just checked recently and I'm not on it anymore.
So were you mentioned on Billy Joel's
Wikipedia page?
So obviously the composer of the song.
Yeah. And now I'm not. So clearly someone at Billy Joel's management has gone, who the fuck is Jim? Get him off.
Or we need to draw up some papers, guys.
This is ridiculous.
Incoming.
Oh God! So that's the closest I've got to being on Wikipedia.
How did it feel?
I felt amazing. I put it straight on my Instagram, obviously.
Yeah,
bio link. Incredible.
Funny, I discovered that. So another sort of career highlight for me has been finding out that Jim and I are both on IMDb, which again feels like something that is very difficult to get onto unless you're a proper actor or actress. And we're on there for the podcast randomly. So
really,
So we finally made it, Jim.
That's the proper stuff. IMDb.
Yeah, yeah. I even thought about starting up a pro account so I could put a photo on it.
Yeah, you have to, otherwise they just pick the photo and there's no control. Yeah.
I think IMDb is done through agents, I think, isn't it? I think it has to be an agent that does that.
No.
So it was probably our little...
No, I don't think so, mate.
No.
Really?
No, it's not. No.
I am learning so much.
No.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, did you spend much time in Scotland then? Were you brought up there or did you move somewhere else?
So my dad was in the RAF and he was based in Elgin and Aberdeen was the closest hospital. I was born there. My brother and sister were born in Germany when he was there. And I was only there till I was like two, and then we moved down south, I think. Obviously, I was still a baby and don't remember any of it. And then when I was about three, four, we moved to Warrington and Dad came out with the RAF. And so I grew up in Warrington. But my mum is Scottish. She's from Stirling. And her parents are Irish, but grew up in Scotland. Like, they moved over.
Okay.
So that's kind of... I had a Scottish accent till I was five because I was around mum all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I went to primary school, nobody understood me. My mum said that I kept it for the longest because I was a bit younger and I wasn't trying to fit in, whereas my brother and sister went to high school and they moved around quite a bit, and as soon as they got to Warrington, they changed their accent in a day and my mum was fuming. Because she's Scottish and they don't like that. Yeah. But yeah.
Can you pull on it quite quickly? Can you go back into it? No, I'm not getting you. I don't want you to demonstrate. I'm not expecting you to demonstrate. Can you fall back into it?
And especially, but I just sound like my mum, so I sound like a 50-year-old.
Yeah.
So like, I just like, and I just say weird words. Like my mum would always say like he'd like for your head and for. Yeah. So when I was growing up, I kind of used to she was a high school teacher as well. So I didn't like that because she wasn't at my school. She was at another school, but I had friends there. So it was really embarrassing. Yeah. Like, parents are embarrassing anyway, but mum was a high school teacher and she was strict. She was a strict Scottish lady who got great results for her students, but she wasn't one that they were like, oh yeah, like she's really cool, because she wasn't. So when I started rebelling against mum, I would just take the mick out of her accent. So I'd be like, it's not he'd, it's head. And she was just like, she was getting fuming and like she'd just say very Scottish words that I would just challenge all the time.
Sounds like she was the Alex Ferguson of teachers.
Just, oh, absolutely. Yeah, like she got really good, like she taught IT, so the ones that were really into IT really liked her, but like she told me that because she's really short as well, she's like 5'1". Or maybe she was 5'2", but she's definitely 5'1" now. She used to get like the tall boys that would tower over her to try and intimidate her. So she used to like stand on a table and then like shout from the table.
Oh, wow.
She's like, you're not going to intimidate me.
Yeah, well, good for her.
I would never try and intimidate a Scottish woman.
I don't know what they were thinking.
I think that's really risky. I think that's a terrible idea. I do find it interesting, like sort of the idea of nationalities and accents and, mm-hmm. and stuff. I mean, we live in Buckinghamshire and our daughter is 2.5 and I'm not from here. I'm from North Kent. So I've got quite a Kent accent.
Okay.
And yet my wife grew up here, so she's got a Bucks accent.
Sorry, Jim, what's the Kent accent?
This.
Yeah.
Whatever this is. Well, it's sort of like, it's a bit estuary, but not quite. And it's a bit slightly well-spoken, but not, it's sort of mixing North Kent. So we weren't too far from Orpington, Bromley, all that kind of, not too far.
Oh, so a little bit more geezerish.
Yeah, but I do put it on. When I'm around football people, I definitely put it on more.
And yeah, I think we do change our way we say things when we're around different. But anyway, sorry, I was just intrigued by the Kent accent.
guess this. Well, I think it depends where you're. I think it's probably different if it's if you're more sort of Dover deal on the coast, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, our daughter, I'm noticing, is getting a Bucks accent already in the way she says things, which means I have absolutely zero influence. That's interesting. That's good to know. But I'm interested with the sort of nationalities and stuff, because you clearly feel very Scottish and Irish and identify as that. And obviously, I've only spent a small time there. I'm half Irish as well, and I've actually never lived there, but my dad's parents are from Cork, and I would probably identify as Irish as well, even though I definitely don't sound Irish and definitely don't. They hadn't lived there. I just find that stuff interesting.
Well, when I was a kid, though, I did not want to be Scottish, and I didn't want anything to do with it because they didn't have a good football team. And yeah, I was really into football, yeah. So we'd be on holiday, and people would ask where I was from. I'd be like, "I'm English," and my mum was like, "You're Scottish," and I was like, "And I'm like, actually, I'm British because I've got Irish in me as well." So yeah. It was only as I got older that I started to really understand what that meant, and well, I still don't know what it means really. It's not, I'm not patriotic or anything, but I think it's more, I've just assumed that because I grew up in England for the most part of my life that I was English, but actually even my dad's got Scottish in his family, so I'm probably the least amount of English there. But then who knows what I am like stemming back. So it is interesting, because I guess a lot of people that live in Britain have a lot of Britishness within them, like whatever that is. And that means a lot of things, doesn't it? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in England, but I'm sure, like, you know, you haven't got to go back that many generations to find Irish and, you know, probably Scandinavian as well, probably not that far back. So I think, you're born in a certain place, but it doesn't mean that you're of that place.
Yeah.
I think it's family stuff as well, like, because I feel strongly Irish because of my family, and that. So I think the older you get, you sort of start to. We got so deep quickly. the older you get, I think that stuff becomes more important. But when you're younger, like you said, you do rebel against your family a little bit, and you're looking for that independence. And then as you get older, you realise actually that family is everything, and then I think you try and cling on to whatever you can find that makes you feel more connected to your family. Wow, I feel like I'm on some sort of documentary.
Who do you think you are?
Oh, I'd love to be on that show.
Jim, we've gone back, and in 1830,
I wouldn't be on the
you
show.
You were on Wikipedia in 1830.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I need to get back on there, then I'll get... But I slightly worry if I was ever on that show. I know what happens, isn't it? Because if there's loads of people that don't make it to air because they research them and their family is just like too boring.
Yeah.
Nothing interesting. And that would be me.
They were
farmers from Cork. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder who... Yeah, it'd be interesting, though, who's been canned. Because, I think I'd be like you, Jim. It would be something quite boring.
You never know. Never know.
So let's talk about obviously getting into performing and acting. Did you do that from a young age? Was that something that you kind of discovered at a young age and always wanted to do?
No. So obviously I did like school plays and stuff, but you all have to do that. You know, we all did the tea towel thing. And but I was into sport a lot as a kid. I wanted to be either a footballer or do athletics because I was a runner. And that was sort of, I just was very sporty. I only wore boys' clothes. At the time, what I thought were boys' clothes. And just sort of, I had an older brother who I used to play football with outside. And my sister was the middle child. And she never got involved because my brother would fight with me and she just hated fighting. And me and my brother were just so competitive. So I think, and my neighbours were boys, and we just used to play out in we had like a cul-de-sac, and we just used to play on BMXs and play football. So it was all about sport when I was really young. And it was only when I got to high school, I joined the choir because my sister was in the choir, and we used to go to the Philharmonic, and they used to do a Christmas show at the Philharmonic in Liverpool. And I just remember watching her and the show and thinking, wow, I feel amazing. And a lot of actors say this because it does make you feel. Yeah. And if you've got that creative, you know, side to you that you just feel like you have to explore. I was I just remember thinking, oh, I want to do this. I want to feel that. So I joined the choir. And then from there in high school, it was when I was getting to like year 10 and 11, I started auditioning for parts. And I was always in the school musicals, but as ensemble. And then one year I decided I was going to audition for the main part and sing. And I could sing, but I had no training and I didn't have like a perfect, you know, a perfectly trained voice. But I went for it, practiced all summer for Les Mis, and I got the part. So, it you know.
Amazing.
And so I was like, oh, maybe I can do this. Because I loved the acting side of it. I always did. I loved drama, and that was always my strong sort of suit. But the singing side and the dancing side I got into quite late as well, because it was all sport. But I was quite athletic, so I got into dance quite easily as well. So it was all musical theatre for me from there. So I went to college in Warrington and did like performing arts and drama and English and the sport, because it was quite a sporty college as well. And I used to look at the football teams and the people that chose the sport course, and I thought, oh, that would have been so different if I'd picked that. I just sort of lent into the theatrical side, and I'm really glad I did. But it just, from then on, I just knew that's what I wanted to do. And yeah, it was from there. It was like, right, audition for drama school. I auditioned for musical theatre at first, thinking that, you know, people would pay to hear me sing on the West End. And then I got into the auditions and I was like, oh, maybe not. It was
the standard was very high, was it?
Well, I mean, in Warrington, I might be good within 20 people, but then you get to London, and then there's people that are trained from like the age of three in ballet and singing. Usually it was really strong dancers or really strong singers. It was rare that there was both of them. And you don't even do the acting bit until you get recalled. So, and I picked songs that were way too high for me, and I'm really hard. I didn't even pick a song that would have made me sound better. But you know, it's just, you know, experienced in it. But it kind of gave me a lot of, you know, rejection at that age, and having to get up and sing along to a piano when you're not actually that experiencing it on your own. Like, I did a lot of group work and I was really good at singing in an ensemble, and I had done bits of solos at college, but nothing to this extent. So it taught me a lot, and it made me realise, oh, actually I think acting's for me, not musical theatre. As much as I loved it and always enjoyed it and was all right at it, I just realised that the two different groups of seeing the acting group and then the musical theatre group, I just felt like I resonated more with the actors than the musical theatre group. So then I started auditioning just for acting.
Yeah, I think from my wife's a trained musical theatre performer as well, and it sounds like the audition, picking the right audition song is massive, is really important.
Yeah.
I guess it's part of your journey, part of learning, part of the experience, and you have to get things wrong before you get them right, and that's just, I think, just the way that you progress and learn these things.
Absolutely, and it led me to realise, oh, actually, doing a musical theatre course isn't for me.
Yeah.
Like, just acting was, you know, I found that through making these mistakes and realising. I mean, I'm surprised I actually gave up on musical theatre so quickly, because I could have tried for another year, like, you know, for other schools for musical theatre, but I think it was just quite clear to me that, you know, from the audition process, that acting was just, you know, that was it.
Your gut kicks in sometimes in those moments, doesn't it? And you're like, okay, yeah, this isn't quite, and it's disappointing. There's a mixture of emotions, because you're obviously disappointed and frustrated maybe with yourself, but at the same time you're just sort of thinking, okay, yeah, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah,
and then there's something else that might feel better. So you I think it's important to listen to our gut sometimes.
Yeah, and I was really determined. I was very determined at that age. And, like, I have to remind myself just how determined I was at that age. Because like, as you get a bit older, you're a bit like, oh, I had so much energy for that. Like, where did that go? because it's so... And also, you don't know the world that you're sort of trying to get into fully yet. So you are slightly naive, but, like, nicely so. Because if you weren't, then maybe you wouldn't sort of push through all the barriers so you just give up. But yeah, like, I was so determined. It was the competitive side of me, I guess, that I would normally use in sport. But not with other actors. Not with other actors. I wasn't competitive in that way. Like, I wasn't trying to out... Well, I mean, naturally, you do try and do your best to get a part or to whatever. But it was more just against myself.
Yeah. I was going to ask you really quickly. So, who's your... Do you support a football team?
Yes. No, very tentative to tell you who. So, I support Liverpool.
Right.
My brother supported Liverpool. My dad supported Man United. And
ooh.
So Dad wasn't happy then.
No, but my sister supported United, so he was fine. And Mum just supported Scotland. Like, she didn't even get into like, it was just probably Scotland. Wise. Yeah, that was it. But no, I supported Liverpool because my brother did. I was really into it as a kid. I used to buy the Liverpool kit every year. I, you know, got all the bobbleheads, all that. But as I got, and my friend is, well, my best mate from prime school and high school, she's got season tickets in the Kop and always has. And I've been a couple of times with her, and it's just, there's no feeling like it in there. But as I've got older and as I've got into acting more, I have kind of slipped back on keeping track because I kind of dip in and out now. So I can't really, I guess I can't really say anything. Well, moment.
Before Jim starts probing you on,
you supported them hardcore all through the years they were terrible, and now they're really good.
I mean, don't get me wrong, really I notice good. When they're doing well, and I'm like, yes, but but yeah, you know, I think any years of supporting a team should contribute to the lifetime of supporting the team.
Absolutely,
definitely.
Yeah, don't be a glory hunter.
We're both Crystal Palace fans, so we very much know about.
We know
that is the reaction, by the way. That's exactly the reaction. That's the reaction you always get. Okay.
Well, sorry about you. That.
Good for you.
I've definitely got more perspective about football because when I was younger, same thing, like all in, football is life, football is everything, and, you know, very much judge other people who dipped in and out and stuff. And as I've got older, I've realised that actually it's just one facet of your being, it's just one part of your life. And again, coming back to family, going to Palace for now is about sitting with my dad.
Yeah.
My dad's 74 now, sitting with him, catching up, chatting about. We've done a few away games together last season, which was brilliant. It's a whole day out together. Absolutely amazing. Mm. And actually, I find during the week, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, I don't engage with it as much. And it's just about the weekends, chatting to my mates who are all Palace fans. And it becomes more one part of my life rather than everything. But again, I think that's just age. You get older, your perspective changes, you work out what's really important. You cling on to the bits throughout your week and the year that make you happy. But it doesn't define you. You know, it's just one part of you.
But I think it is good with the social element of football is really good. But I do notice that, and I guess, because my best mate, she's been into it for years. And I know she gets a bit frustrated sometimes when people speak to her, like, as if she wouldn't know about football because she's the woman. And that's obviously not as, you know, noticeable now, but especially growing up, I think. But she knew everything because she was just so into it. But I do think that, like, it is interesting when you see a group of guys, it was like a sort of way for them to sort of have something to talk about. But then you'll have someone who's into a completely different sport and they don't watch football. And then I've seen them struggle to talk to a guy because they're all talking about football. And it's really fascinating to see that even just that sport, because so many, it's so accessible, football, and it's huge. So I just found that really interesting that it is a conversation starter, but if you don't watch football, you might struggle.
It's a bit tricky,
Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you find another sport, and then you'll find one other person that likes another sport, and then they connect really well with that person. Yeah, yeah.
It is a completely, if you're a party and don't know anyone, generally, it's a shame, it's such a cliche, but
yeah,
you're absolutely right. Generally, it is, if you chat to some blokes, you probably will find some common ground on football. And it's nice in a way, because like I said, it brings people together, and actually, it's one of the few sort of like global languages, really. Mm. If you go abroad and you can't speak a language, but if you say a Spanish football team or a Spanish football player, you can connect to someone from that country. Or, you know, it is fascinating, but there are, as you say, there are a lot of negative parts of football and a lot of parts of football that need to progress into sort of modern way of thinking. And it is getting better, but there are still a lot of people that are behind on that. But actually, to be honest, the coverage this year and 2 years ago of the women's Euros this year, World Cup 2 years ago, has been fascinating, actually, because it's a lot of people are getting on board. It's
absolutely,
it's really enjoyable. I mean, obviously, it helps that England won 8-0 the other day, obviously, but it's that will help. But I went to the women's FA Cup final in 2019 for work, and it was probably the best football atmosphere I've ever been to, because it was a real, so that Wembley, full house. And it was just a very joyous occasion. Mm. People were there just to have fun rather than... Well, Giles and I went to the semi-final for Palace-Chelsea in April, and there were so many reports of people kicking... And we were lucky where we were, didn't see any, but people kicking off and having fights with their own fans and stuff. And just and yet, the funny thing about the Women's FA Cup final was there were lots of... What was really nice, lots of dads and daughters there, which was really nice. And I thought... it was West Ham Man City. So it's quite a lot sort of big West Ham fans, big West Ham flat caps, you know what I mean? Big shirts.
Peaky Blinders.
And there was one guy in front of me, and he was quite mouthy. And I was like, oh God, here we go. It's going to be sort of a classic sort of like dad bloke at football. And he was incredibly knowledgeable. He's going, oh, she was better at left-back last season. Now, her attacking rate's much better when she's playing down the flank. I know, when they connect to... And I was like, oh, my God, this guy's got so into women's football. And it was just really refreshing. It was really, really enjoyable. So I guess in that aspect, things are getting better. But there are definitely areas of football that I think still need improvement. Mm. Sorry, I've done what I normally do every episode, which is turn it onto football somehow.
Well, that's okay, because I did actually want to be a footballer when I was younger. Like, I thought if there was more... I got to high school and was told that girls weren't allowed on the football team, but I was in primary school.
So rubbish, isn't it?
Bloody hell.
Which, well, I mean, I guess that was just the way it was then. But then I was on... So I did hockey and netball, but then the boys were allowed on the hockey and netball team.
Yeah, I know. It's...
And so I was just so... You know, and I think I was quite in tune with that when I was younger, because... up until the age of like 12, I wanted to be a boy. Like, I just wanted to be a boy so much, because all my friends are boys. And I've thought about that later in life and gone, where did that come from? What did that mean? And I think I only got to the, it wasn't like, yeah, it's quite interesting, because it wasn't like I wanted it so much that I wanted to become a boy, I don't think, for me, because I think what I tuned into that from that age was sexism. And I was like, how can my brother do this? And how can they do this? But I can't. So then I would do everything I can to do what the boys could do. And that's just sort of... So if at high school they'd said I could be on the football team, or there was a football team that I could play on, I wonder where that would have taken me. But perhaps drama and acting would have always turned up anyway.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I could have gone to college and done a sports course, and they did have a women's football team there, and I didn't choose it. So I think I probably would have always gone into acting. But it's just, I think that's quite interesting, that sort of path.
Yeah. Is it because basically you were into stuff that society has classified, quote unquote, boys things?
Yes.
Which obviously it's not. They are just things that anyone is into.
But anyone like can do.
If you go to like clothes shops and you see, we've seen this with our daughter, boys' t-shirts will say like future builder or superhero, that kind of stuff. And girls' t-shirts will say little princess.
Yeah.
And you still see it now, and they'll be pink and the boys' ones will be blue. Whereas what we did with our daughter, Miranda just went on eBay and bought loads of unisex kids stuff, because Maria doesn't care what she's wearing.
No,
she's
two.
It doesn't matter. As long as it fits her and she can get it mucky, that's all that matters. So you do still definitely see that, I think, that sort of structural sexism in society. It's interesting.
And I think with clothing as well, I do always think that the parents that knew me at primary school, like if they see me now, on Wikipedia or online somewhere. Like, and I have bumped into a primary school parent not too long ago, and she was just like, wow, have you changed? And I'm like, I kind of haven't. I'm so, like, I mean, you can see what I look like now. I'm like this most of the time, no makeup. I've got, like, you know, I've got quite sporty attire most of the time. But then I do enjoy the whole glamming up every now and then because it's fun. And I enjoy that side of, you know, doing all of that now. Whereas a kid, I hated it. But yeah, I like, I guess variety is the spice of life, isn't it?
Completely.
No one's ever said that before.
I was just thinking, like, you were saying about obviously your determination once you got into the acting thing, and I was thinking that actually some of those disciplines from sport, you know, obviously sport's very disciplined, you have to be very disciplined if you want to do it, could kind of come across onto the acting stuff. So I guess you did carry some of that. I know you said about the competitiveness, but also the kind of discipline to learn the acting and the craft of doing those things.
Yeah, I do think that. And also being a team player, that's huge. Definitely. To me.
Yeah.
And I think as an actor, I'd say probably more so in TV, but I'm sure it does happen in theatre as well. But in TV, on single cam, you know, if it's just your shot or it's just somebody else's shot, you really can see the difference between people who are team players and know how to make a really good ensemble piece on TV, as opposed to those who just kind of switch on and off when it's just them. So I think that that has probably come from sport and my sort of that's my moral compass. I've always been a team player, and I think the things that I love watching are always the sort of shows that have such a strong ensemble, and you can just tell that they're all in it together. They're having such a great time, and they all complement each other's performances. Because at drama school, I remember someone saying to me, and it's always stuck with me, he's like, the other actor is more important than you are. They are more important than what you are doing. And because you're in it together, you know, you're in the moment together. You don't know necessarily where it's going to go. So you have to be, and you know, not everybody works that way. And that probably has come from sport.
So can you tell that then? If you're watching a show or something, you can get a vibe of people that are in it together?
Not always, but I think maybe with comedy I notice it more. So, like, you know, a show like The Office or even, I mean, I watch a lot of American comedy as well because, I just find it. It's the same, but the way they work it is a bit, obviously they have different sort of structures, but you know, even things that I love, Parks and Recs, and I'm obsessed with Mindy Kaling. So when she did the Mindy Project, I got obsessed with that in lockdown. Amazing. But like when they, but the cast, you can just tell, and you can tell when you then follow them on Instagram or whatever, and their relationships off camera, but when you can just tell that they're really enjoying working together and they're in it together, and that's why it works so well. Whereas, you know, especially in comedy, I think you have to, you know, if you don't land, if you're not in it together and it's not landing, it's not going to work. So I think you can really tell it on shows like that, but it may be not so much in films and stuff, but that's what I look out for anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, like, obviously you said The Office and Parks and Recs, where I guess there's probably, I mean, or having said this, I think they are quite tightly scripted. Well, The Office was very tightly scripted, although it looked kind of improvised. I know Parks and Rec maybe have a little bit more improvisation, but that's a massive thing, like, to be able to sort of lean on each other for those moments. So you would have to have that camaraderie and trust in one another if you're going to do that kind of stuff. If you're going to, particularly improvisation, where you're, you know, you've really got to trust one another, I guess, if you're in a room doing that. So I think, I think you're right in saying that. I think, like, particularly with improvisation, you do need to be, like, in it together and as a team.
Yeah, it's any way improv works. Yeah, like you can't, you know, improvise with somebody and just be on your own doing your own thing, because it takes, you know, listening, which is what acting is, you know. So, that's kind of what I sort of look out for when I'm watching. So, all stuff that I tend to really enjoy. What I don't do now, though, is I used to follow the actors, if I didn't already follow them on Instagram, if there's a show that I really, really like, I guess I'm still curious what they might be like in real life. If I don't already know them, I'm like, wonder. But I used to follow them after like the first or second season of something, and I'd be way behind. It's something that's been on TV for years, and it's come on Netflix, and I want to watch it. And then you just get all the spoilers. I was like, why have I done that?
Yeah.
So, because I started Grey's Anatomy really late. I mean, I guess lots of people do. You either watched it or you didn't. And I really got into Grey's Anatomy. And I made, by that point, I'd made that mistake. So I made sure I didn't follow any of them until I got, like, I mean, it's still ongoing. So I've started to follow a couple of them now. But for a long time, I'm not following them. I don't want to know what happens. Because the spoilers are out there.
It's another thing the internet's ruined.
Yeah.
Like, because it's really hard. Like, even just like sort of scrolling on social media, we've just managed to finish Stranger Things without.
I was about to say it. Yeah.
You can see from my cap I'm wearing today. that without sort of getting any spoilers, but it's a nightmare to navigate social media with regards to spoilers and stuff now.
I imagine though that. Because we had to do it as well on Hollyoaks. We weren't allowed to post anything until it was on. But then once it was on, you could post about it. But it's kind of because you want to keep people up to date, especially if you're on TV and they want the ratings. It keeps people like, I have to watch it. Otherwise, I'll just end up finding out. So I guess it is quite tactical.
Who was it? Was it Prue? It was Prue Leith, wasn't it, who leaked the winner of Bake Off one year because she tweeted congratulations to the winner, but she was in Australia at the time and got confused about the time differences. And thought it was the right time in the UK. That was just like 11 hours ahead and blew the winner.
You've
got to be so careful, haven't you?
Got to be careful. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we talked to Wendy McClendon Covey about, because she's in... the Goldbergs, and they live tweet when it's on.
And
that's become a thing now, which is kind of strange, and she said it's quite a strange thing to do, like watch our show but actually ask me questions all the way through it. It's kind of random, but that's become a thing as well. It's like this sort of dual watching, like, you, because I guess maybe networks and TV companies expect people to be kind of on their phones while they're watching.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite... I guess I've never done that. I think I would probably struggle. Because you have to know exactly what you want to say. Or I don't know, like, I'd be terrified of saying something and go, I want to delete that tweet.
Yeah.
And then someone screen grabbed it or something.
Yeah, it's too late.
Yeah,
it's quite a skill in itself.
What are you like with social media?
Well, yeah, it's quite interesting because I used to use it a lot, and especially when I was in the show, I would try and keep up with, you know, what was happening on screen and post, you know, behind the scenes photos that the fans would like, and then just elements of my own life. And that's the thing about Instagram, is it's sort of, I just kind of did it and didn't think much of it. I mean, obviously we had to be careful what we posted, and because we had quite a young audience, you had to, there were certain things that they would say, you know, we kind of don't want you to post this or that, and try and avoid posting loads about betting, and betting, but do you know what I mean?
Constantly betting, constantly post about betting. These ones are great.
I lost again. Yeah, so we couldn't do any of that. You were mindful about what you were putting out there. And you kind of want to be anyway, because you realise that you're influencing a lot of people, especially young people. Mm-hmm. But, I was quite on it a lot. And then I left the show, and I've dipped in and out. I think in lockdown I did a lot because I was so bored at times. And I lived alone as well. So I started talking to the camera as if I was talking to... Like, most of my friends would reply. And then, obviously, the people that were following me that were interested in the rubbish I was talking about were... involved. But I was just, you know, I used it quite a lot. But then when the world opened up again a bit, I've just been in it and enjoying being in it. So I've kind of stepped back a little bit because, you know, it's always going to be there. And it's something that I will always use. And you kind of, as for work, you use it. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm trying to just go with the flow a little bit more and not let it dictate what I do. Because I think it can get like that. And everyone I speak to that has a break from social media feels better. And I've had many breaks from it. And I just think that's really important. It's, you know, I'm an actor and I will use it for work and for my enjoyment when I enjoy it. But I don't want to feel like that's just my life. And that's because it feels like it can take over. But with Twitter, I don't really use Twitter much anymore. Like, I do go on it. But I got it when it first came out. And it was very different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was so silly and just very, just nonsense.
It was nonsense. It was fun. It was carefree. And as it's aged... I guess maybe it's going for its teen life. It's like teenager.
I mean, it definitely has its benefits the way it is now. I do think there's loads of benefits to it now. But I got the new phone recently, and for some reason, I just couldn't remember my password. And the amount of times I change my password, I feel like that's my part-time job because I can never remember it. But I didn't have it on my phone for about 2 months. And then I managed to finally get in and reset it. I was a bit like, well, I've not missed this. It just wasn't something that I'm like, oh, I'm glad I'm back on Twitter. It's just, no.
I've not been on it for 4 months. Twitter, and it's been blissful.
Maybe that's why I didn't like it, because you weren't on it. Because I came back and you weren't tweeting.
I've only come back for Giles and he's gone.
You're the
only person that said that ever. and basically, I tweeted today. I just said I'm not on here anymore. Come and find me on Instagram, basically. But you
felt the benefits, haven't you? You felt the benefits.
Oh, massively! Yeah, it's like it's a bit like a sobriety almost, not being on there. It's less feeling on edge. I deleted the news app as well. That was a good thing to do as well. So
because that just pops up all the time, doesn't it? And you just can't. I kind of got all my news from Twitter in lockdown. That's where it was coming from. But I also think on Instagram is, you know, it has its own problems, but you can't really hide behind anything on Instagram. You have to show your face. Well, you don't have to, but you kind of have to show something or, you know, and if you are saying something on there, you usually know who's saying it, what they look like, what's, you know, a bit about them. Whereas on Twitter, it is just, you don't get that. So... Which, again, there are great things about that too, but I don't know, I find that people can hide behind something a bit more on Twitter. Yeah.
Twitter's a bit like the Wild West, really, I think, when it comes to sort of social media. What's been interesting, I found recently, so I created a new account, Twitter account, away from my old one became like work, new stuff, a very depressing feed. If it wasn't depressing news or other comedians getting jobs I want, it was just a stream of just depressing things that I didn't want to see.
So I compare and despair.
So I created a new one just for fantasy football because that was the only thing that was like making me happy. And it's been revolutionary, and I've managed to cultivate a really supportive, friendly little community. Way fewer followers, but actually better engagement and nicer engagement and in this little FPL community. So now when I go on my Twitter feed, I feel happier. Like I actually get the positive, whatever it is, dopamine hits or whatever, rather than all the negative stuff before. So it's depressing that stuff is out there and those trolls are out there and those faceless trolls and people like that. But it's almost like you just have to kind of cultivate your own little world on there, and maybe that's what social media is. It's just you find your little community, and same on TikTok, there are so many different sides of TikTok and communities, and it's all about people finding shared interests and stuff. So maybe it's more about that. It sucks that those people are out there, but actually if you maybe just try and filter them out and shut them off, you can have a positive experience of social media.
I think that with Twitter, when I first started Hollyoaks, that was the main sort of social media page that everybody used. So I didn't get into Instagram till quite late. But the thing that we experienced on there, and the producer at the time did warn me, and I'm glad he did, because he kind of said something that stuck with me, you know, about social media. And he said, you know, there's going to be people that love you on there, especially because I was a recast. So it was going to be people that love the girl who played before I did. And then people who, you know, it's just the way it is. It's like Marmite. And he said to me, some people are going to love you. Some people are going to hate you. You're going to get everything. But the extremes aren't really that real. So even people that I love you so much, it's not that real just as much as the someone who hates you that much. And so I kind of just didn't, I think I came off Twitter for the first like 4 months of being on Hollyoaks because I didn't want to look at it. But if I don't look at it, then I don't need to deal with it.
Yeah, you don't know it's there, yeah.
But then I got used to it. And actually the things that people would say that were mean, we just all used to like, and maybe I didn't get anything that was too mean. It was more sort of, we just learnt to laugh about it. A few of my friends, we'd go, right, let's see what people said about us today. And that's that was a great way of dealing with it because it's not real. And also, sometimes you'd reply or like it and they'd be like, oh, you're amazing. It's like, hang on a minute. And so it's just, it's not real. But then obviously I had some friends that had some really horrible stuff said to them and that's never nice to read because it's about the way they looked. And, you know, so I totally get people not being able to handle it because it's not a nice thing to go through. But I think when I was first on the show, I got so used to that. Again, it's a bit like getting so used to rejection, is that people are not going to like you. Especially my character did some really annoying things. And so I think a lot of it is not just me, but the character. Some people are going to hate your character and love another one. And then you get people who love your character and hate another one because that's just the way it is. So we just kind of got used to that. And there were some hilarious tweets, like, there really was. There was.
But then they're projecting the character traits and flaws and person on you, clearly an actor. But I guess they're sort of amalgamating it.
Oh, but they're so in it. So she was because some people think it's real, so it's like, you know.
Well, I was going to say, I wanted to ask you about Hollyoaks. Was it a bit of a baptism of fire in some respect? Because I can imagine it's, like shooting schedules are pretty full on, and I guess script changes are quite full on as well, I should imagine, on a soap opera. So I guess it's a busy schedule, but plus, you've obviously, like you say, people really been watching it since, you know, with soap operas as well, you know, if they've been going quite a long time, people are really into it, aren't they? And then, and like you say, they feel they're friends with the characters in it and stuff, you know, so they kind of really take on board all the different scenarios that are going on. So was it quite, you know, I guess it was very exciting, but was it also quite challenging, like getting into doing a role on a show like that?
I think I was really ready for it. I'd come out of drama school. I hadn't worked for a year. It was sort of that time where it's like, oh, I need to get my first job. I did a couple of things, but nothing quite as big as Hollyoaks. And then, so I was ready for it and I was ready to be thrown into the deep end because I hadn't done TV. So I didn't know. I'd done bits at drama school, but not that amount. So I really just like went for it and really enjoyed the experience. There obviously were times where it is so full on that you're so tired and trying to keep up with everything changing. It's so fast and it's single cam, which compared to the other soaps is, you know, they've got three cameras all the time.
Okay, that's interesting.
So it was great because you learn a lot of films are filmed like that and other TV series, so you learn how to work the camera, which was very beneficial. And you built up such a great skill set that, and I speak to a few of my friends that have now left as well. And when you go on to other sets, you just feel so ready. That was the best thing about it, is that you're pretty much prepared for anything thrown at you because you've dealt with anything that could go wrong, how fast you have to work, scripts changing on the day. There, you know, there's nothing that can quite prepare you for that than a soap that you've done for like what I did for 5 years. So I felt really ready. There's a lot that comes with the show. It's not just you being an actor and doing that. It's the sort of the promotional side of it and the publicity side of it as well. That's quite hard to navigate for everyone because you've got the show wanting to publicise what they want for the show. And then you as an individual, you're trying to figure out what you're doing with your acting career as a whole, especially when you're playing a younger part, like you're newer to the industry. And yeah, that was quite hard to navigate at times, although I'm glad I went to drama school first and I wasn't, you know, I was a little bit older than my part. I kind of knew what to say no to. And if I was a bit younger and less experienced, maybe I wouldn't have. So I'm really glad that I was ready for it. You know, and there's things that you do and you go, oh, maybe I should or shouldn't have done that. But it wasn't anything that substantial. But it is, without somebody sort of telling you what that's managing, I guess everyone has agents and they manage your career. But at the time, I was kind of left to my own devices. So and only you know what you want from something, and but you're just trying to figure it out. So I think for me, there were some challenges in the show's trying to represent you in a certain way for your character. And then you're playing the same character for such a long time that you kind of, like, you don't mold into them. And my character felt so different to me because she was younger and way more immature. Definitely could relate to being her when I was younger. but, you know, she was, you know, doing some, you know, making some really bad choices, but it's soap. So I felt very different to her at times, but it's just trying to figure out who you are as an artist, how do you fit into this industry when you're new to it, when this machine that you're in is kind of engineered in a certain way. I've definitely felt it, and I know that I've had friends that have felt it. It's like trying to figure out, you know, where to go next, or what is it that I want from this, and should I do this? Or because a lot of things get thrown at you and you've got to decide what you're going to do with it. And when you're in that bubble, you've got a lot of people saying different things, but from the same bubble, you question everything. And then you don't know whether you should or you shouldn't do something. You start second guessing yourself. And I've definitely noticed since leaving that I feel far more myself now. And that's not anything to do with the show in terms of what, you know, this is all just part of the experience, is I think coming out of a bubble like that. And, you know, I've had lots of friends leave the show and I've seen them go through the same thing, is you're trying to find what it is that you want, and you start to use your own mind more. I start to feel like me again a bit. So yeah, that was quite interesting journey.
That is interesting, and because I guess you do have to commit yourself to the character. You have to commit to being this person, and I guess you're probably then getting asked and told things by people in that bubble who have been in that bubble longer than you. So they've been there a long time, asking you to do things or whatever, and you're new to it. So they're probably treating you like someone that's been there a long time, and you're trying to work out all this stuff to do, and those challenges come along. And are you talking about challenges in terms of stuff in the script and stuff you're asked to do on set, or promotional stuff, or
more sort of the publicity side? I think, like, your sort of public profile and your sort of choices outside of the acting, because with the acting it's like you turn up, you know what you're doing. I mean, don't get me wrong, there would have been, because things change all the time, you definitely have certain challenges on set with, like, oh, this has changed, does this, and there's lots of people involved. So you've got different directors for every week of the show, then you've got different writers and different editors, and then you're the one that's doing it all the time. So there were definitely, like, things that would crop up and you'd talk about and try and iron out and stuff like that naturally. But in terms of you as yourself, you know, what to do as you go forward, and promotion within the show and the sort of publicity side, it was quite confusing. But then that's because you go from just being, you know, not being known to being going into doing things on a public profile. So there's an added pressure with that as well that you're trying to navigate.
Yeah, because you're sort of thrust, you are basically thrust into the limelight suddenly, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, the whole host of, like I say, these little fans of the show and everything, like, they're kind of, you know, they're in your face to a certain extent, and that can be a lot to deal with.
I mean, I've got to say, the Hollyoaks fans are amazing. Like, they really are. Like, they do sort of, and the, especially the ones that would come to support you, and like when you drove out of the gate, they'd always be there. And I see them, like they've even been to like film premieres that I've been in, like they've come and supported, and they are just lovely. The ones that are really dedicated and really love it, because that is what the, you know, they're supporting the show, they're supporting what you're doing, and it means so much to them. So that is great, and I've always loved that about the show. It does do a lot for young people as well. Like I watched it when I was younger, and I learned so much just from watching Hollyoaks. But I think that when I first joined, because you're not on, it's not until you're on screen a lot that you start getting recognised. But I just had it in my head that I was so different to my character, and that I wore my hair different. I was in a school uniform. So that when I was me, I was like, I won't get recognised. Like, I just won't, because I've just got one of those faces that I look like lots of different people. Because people would always go, oh, you look like my best friend, which makes you feel really unique. And I was like, okay, you know, I won't get recognised. And one of my friends on the show was like, yeah, okay. I was like, I won't. And then I used to love going, I lived in Manchester at the time, and I used to love going to the Trafford Centre. And when I'm shopping, I'd like to look at an item for at least 5 minutes and decide whether I like it, don't like it, do I even need it? But I like to do that alone. And, you know, I don't like to be judged for that length of time that I like to make that decision. But then I started to get recognised in shops, and like young teenagers would follow me around the shop. And I got so panicked. I was like, what is happening? It was just so surreal. And I was like, they're watching me look at this item for too long. I must move on to the next one. And then it confused my shopping habits. I was like, oh, I don't know how to shop like this. I can't make this decision so quick. So panic bought a lot of stuff. it really put me on edge. So I didn't go to the Trafford Centre for about 6 months, because I was like, I don't want to be followed around the shop, and I don't know what to say, and I don't know what to do, I don't know how to deal with it, because it just felt really odd. It is odd. Mm. It's not like, and I'm not, I do know some people that will be like, love to get recognised. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's me. A bit like Joey on Friends. It is me. You know. But I honestly...
I thought you worked here.
Exactly. But I just... It freaked me out. I just didn't know how... I was so used to being in my own world that I just didn't know how to handle it. So I avoided places like the Trafford Centre for a while, and then you just couldn't avoid it. And actually, if you were with the people from Hollyoaks, like, it's kind of confirmation that it is you, because there's a group of you. And then I saw how other people handled it, and then I relaxed a little bit. The more I was on the show and the more I got used to it, you do just get used to it, and you know how to handle it a bit more gracefully. And there's definitely horrible sides to it that you have to deal with that can be quite scary at times, but you just do. And so I got far more relaxed. You know, it's just one of those things. But at first, I felt very overwhelmed. And, like, I think with all of it, because it is a lot. It wasn't just that. It was that filming five, six days a week, or learning TV for the first time. It was just a lot to take in all in one go. And then, you know, the people around you sort of reacting to it as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of input. Mm. You know, like you say, like there's lots of information getting thrust upon you, and that is a lot. It's too much for our ancient brains to deal with. we overload ourselves. We talked about social media earlier, but we do overload ourselves with stuff, don't we? Input from all sorts of things, and we can only handle so much. And I think that, you know, like you say, emotionally and physically and mentally, that would have been tricky for anybody to deal with.
Yeah, it is, and you can see it whenever someone's new. And I didn't live in Liverpool, so I wasn't with the cast for the first year. And so it took me a little while to get to know people. And I'm very... That's not really me. I get in there straight away and get to know people and sort of make friends. I make friends in a lift in a hotel. Like, that's just what I'm like. But because there's so much going on in your brain and you're trying to just do your job... And everyone was lovely to me. And I was playing Steph's daughter. Steph's been in it for years. So she was really great. She helped me on set. She would check in, like she'd call me. She was amazing. So that really helped, just having that. And I was very lucky that I had that, because I wasn't a character going in that just had to play, maybe like, you know, a detective for a year and a half, or play like they're bringing a villain most, like, you know, every 18 months where you're kind of on your own. So I was very lucky that I had that sort of staple family unit there, which really helped.
Yeah, I can imagine that's one of the pluses of not only working on a TV show, but probably working on a soap, because it's so intense. You're going to be spending a lot of time with people. So, but I guess, and I don't know anything about this side of TV producing, but I guess, do they sort of pick people not just based on their skills in front of the camera, but personality-wise? And they think, well, this person's going to fit in really well to the cast, or this person's working with this person a lot, and I think they'll work personality-wise together. Or is that just sort of potluck?
I mean, I think they kind of see how your first 6 months go. They try and gauge it in auditions. Like, you just would for any audition. Like, are we going to enjoy working with this person? Are they going to fit in?
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, because I guess acting does attract lots of people that you might not want to work with.
All types.
Yeah.
Well, diplomatically put.
Thanks. But yeah, I think they sort of gauge your first 6 months, because my first contract was 6 months, so they probably were like, we'll see how it goes, because you just don't know a person, do you? You don't know what they're gonna be like, but you can only gauge so much in an audition. But I think they obviously try and figure that out in the audition as well. But in mine, I just really got on with Steph, like, straight away. They got us to do improv, and I was really prepared for it, and I didn't really think that I would get it. I just thought, well, you know, the character's a little bit younger than me, and, you know, I don't know, I just thought there's no way, because, a few reasons why I thought there was no way, but I found it very quickly, and I was in straight away, because I was a recast, so I found out, and 2 days later I was filming. So I didn't have that build-up. It was like, here's 9 scripts, which I read and learned on a weekend. I learned all 9 scripts, which were going to change what I didn't know. No, but I didn't have to. And then Steph was like, "Why have you learned all of them? Just learn the ones you're going to do the next day." I was like, oh, I just thought I needed to know it all. Yeah. And then it changed. All the scripts changed. So I was like, okay, well, that wasn't very helpful.
Yeah, so it sounds like now, like, you're kind of probably trying to get a bit more autonomy on your career and do more things that you want to do. And I know we've talked about it, about this short film that you've done called Voices, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about that and how that came about? Because I can't wait to see it. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I really want to. It looks really good.
Well, I have to send it to you because you can't watch it yet. Because it's still out on the festival. It's still out
It's
the festival. So they don't release it until all those have been done. But I can send it to you. If you want.
I really want to see it.
Do you know what? I've never done short film before. And it's kind of something that I guess a lot of people do when they're starting out. If you're just trying to get credits and you're trying to get some experience on camera. But the Omar, who's written it, he actually saw me in a show that I did. So when I came out of Hollyoaks, I did a Bollywood musical. Though it was kind of not... It was set in London, and so it had elements of Bollywood in it, but it wasn't it wasn't all Bollywood numbers. And it was like sort of set in the modern day. He came to watch me in that because he was friends with the director. And then he'd written this short film and asked me to read it and asked if I wanted to be in it. And I read the script and I was like, this is brilliant. Like, the writing was great. The twist at the end was great. I thought, this is, I've never had to think twice. Like, I didn't think twice about it. I was just, this is great. So, and, you know, it gives me a bit more film experience because obviously mine's all been TV. So I did, we were supposed to do it in 2020, then lockdown happened. Then we were supposed to do it before we actually did. And then the producer had a death in the family, so they had to pull out last minute.
Yeah.
And so we pushed it back again. But it meant I had the script for 2 years. So I had this script that I'd... And it didn't change that much. We'd worked on it on Zoom and everything. We talked a lot about it because it's quite layered with the topic. And so when I got there, I just knew it really well. Omar was great to work with. The crew, Abby, the director, the crew, everyone was just like having so much fun. And I think it's because we started to open up again a bit, so just people were really enjoying working again, I guess. So it just made it really special, and I just had the best time. It was a night shoot for two days, and I just had so much fun with it. It was something that I guess is probably one of my favorite things I've done, because of the script and the sort of, it was so different to what I'd done before, but I just really enjoyed it. And so we went to the screening, I can't remember when it was now, so when I moved to London, which was like, I think it was March. And I realised it was the first time I'd seen myself on the big screen. Like, I've seen big screens of Hollyoaks and, you know, other stuff, but I hadn't seen myself on the big screen before. And I was like, this is quite special. It didn't hit me until afterwards. And I thought, oh, that's quite cool. Surreal. But my mate was with me. She was like, you're on the big screen. I was like, yeah, I guess I am. I hadn't really thought about it. But, so it's been submitted to festivals and stuff. I don't really know how all that works, to be honest. But I just really enjoy, I've got the material now. And I'm now, like, filming something else, and it's kind of, I've done a couple of other sort of films, and film now has, it was always quite new to me. Obviously I've grown up watching films, but I'd never done it. And I really love it. I love that you're sort of all part of this one story and process, like from beginning to end. My experience has been so many people involved, and things constantly changing. The fact that you've got, you know, this story arc and everyone's on the same project and the same sort of thing, it's really nice. So yeah.
I was going to ask, is that more of what you want to do then going forward? Because when we were talking earlier about soaps being a good grounding, you do see a lot of soap performers ending up in films and moving to Hollywood. Neighbours seems to have a massive track record of people going from there and then ending up in the States.
There's been some really high profile people from Neighbours, isn't there? Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, but clearly that seems like something you want to do more of.
Well, I'd love to do more film just because I like doing things that are new and that challenge me. And yeah, I've started to learn more about sort of what that feels like when you're on set and the process. So yeah, I'd love to do more film, but I also really enjoy TV still. It's not something that, you know, if a show that I really liked came up or a new show that I just love, for me, it's all about storytelling and the role.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If a story comes up or a role comes up and I'm like, I want to be a part of this, it kind of doesn't matter what it's in. I do think that I'm very focused on TV and film at the moment. I love theatre. And if that was to come up again in the future and it wasn't like a whole year, because I think doing a whole year or something, maybe I would, it depends what it is, I mean, but I think for me, it's all about what's the story, what role is it, do I want to be a part of that? Because we're storytellers, so I think that's what's always drawn me to whichever project comes up for me.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, it's always got to be about, how good the story is, and whether you are the right person to sort of tell that story as well, I think. You know,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, Amanda, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. I know you're on your holes, so thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Amanda Clapham on The Blank Podcast. What a fantastic guest. So easy to talk to, just full of life and just very bubbly. And just, as we said, we could have done and did chat to her for quite a lot after we stopped the mics. But just a very lovely outlook on life, obviously on a big show and stuff. But I loved a very positive approach to learning that job sort of on the go and taking all these things into other areas of her life. And yeah, just a wonderful person who I'm sure you're going to hear more from. We'll go from strength to strength, and really appreciate her not just being on the podcast, but taking time out from her holiday to Zoom in while on holiday with us. So that was, much appreciated.
Yeah, it was lovely to talk to Amanda. And like we say, we sort of covered quite a lot of ground on all sorts of things. And it was really fascinating to hear about, you know, the challenges that come along with being thrust into the sort of limelight, you know, being in a high profile TV show and stuff. So I think, you know, it was really good that she was able to talk to us about that and how that's something she's had to sort of wade through when she was in that situation. So that was really interesting. And it sounds like lots of exciting things coming up for her. So I'm really excited to hear all about what she's doing next. And she's just a really lovely person. And it was, she was phoning in from Ibiza, of all places.
Yeah, lovely. Which actually, I was about to say probably better weather than here. Actually, it's probably not, because it's actually gorgeous here today.
It's very warm.
Sunny days everywhere. I nearly mentioned when she was talking about sort of being thrust into the limelight and trying to deal with it and people following her and around the shopping centre and stuff. It almost felt a bit like, I think people on Love Island feel the same sort of thing, that they go from sort of nothing to suddenly having hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram overnight and stuff. And actually, I think mentally that it's quite difficult to deal with. And I guess maybe it comes with the territory a little bit, but, and she's actually clearly, Amanda's dealt with it in quite a good way there, actually, given herself that distance to be able to understand and accept that situation, sort of grow with it, which I think was a very sort of mature way of dealing with it. But a lot of people aren't able to do that and struggle, I think. So you never really think about that side of acting or reality TV or that side of the game, but it is, you know, people are only human at the end of the day, and it can have a toll on your mental health, I think.
Oh yeah, I mean, you sort of hear it time and time again with people, and I think it's getting worse, I think, in some ways, because not only have you got regular, you know, tabloid media and all that, you've got social media as well, so you've got it coming from all sides, really. And the tabloids seem to have got worse as well in the, you know, taking things out of context and looking for clickbait and all that kind of stuff, you're even more in the thick of stuff. So I think you have to sort of be even more guarded and protective of yourself and get the right people around you to help you and support you.
I think they've got a bit more desperate. I think maybe the sort of, we talked about this in a few previous pod, didn't we? Like the competitive nature of sort of news online now, I think, makes them more desperate for stories. And in fact, actually, that's a good lead into our patron section, because now our patron section, Amanda talks about a story that just a silly little, not silly little thing, it was quite a traumatic thing that she put on Instagram, and it went viral on newspapers and stuff. And so I think they are constantly looking, I just think they are desperate for stories.
Well, you could argue it's a dying, you know, and because of social media perhaps and the internet, it's a bit of a dying form, the newspaper in general, you know, and newspapers are looking for more sensationalized sort of things. And I guess also, you know, you get that online as well. They're more sensational, not just in the print form. And it's just, a lot of it is bollocks.
yeah, quite.
What, for want of a better word to use.
Yeah, quite. But anyway, we should wrap up there. We've teased our
Wrap up
there,
on so bollocks.
you can get more from Amanda, really fascinating actually, about this story, at our Patreon, patreon.com, patreon.com/blankpodcast. As you do with all our guests each week, there's a little bit extra there for our patrons. But in the meantime, that's it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Again, get in contact with us. Like, I loved it. Get in contact with us like Jordan did early on, and tell us bits you loved from episodes, or whether you're new to the podcast, just anything. We'd love to hear from you. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook is all the same handle. It is
@blankpod.
Indeed. So you can find us pretty easily on all those platforms.
Really easily.
Very easily.
And it's actually free. I don't know if anyone knows. It's free to follow people on Instagram and Twitter and that.
Yeah, indeed.
And you can get updates all the time. You can message us.
Exactly. Exactly.
For free.
And we will read it. And we might even read them out on the podcast.
For free.
so anyway, thanks so much to Amanda for joining us and being so brilliant. Thanks to our patrons, thanks to our listeners, and thanks to you, Giles. It's another lovely episode.
Yeah, we're very lucky, aren't we, with these wonderful guests?
Massively, massively. So we appreciate it. And be back next week.
We will.
With another episode.
I know, we're relentless.
We are relentless. We will never go away. Anyway, have a great week, whatever you do. Take care, and we'll see you again soon on the Black Podcast. Goodbye.
Guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is a Blast Box Media Podcast. Thank you.